All right, let's go ahead and get started. We've got a low turnout today, mainly because we're doing it on a strange time and day. Here's our agenda. This is the last prep meeting before we have our face-to-face in San Francisco next week. Today on the agenda, we've got we're going to move the use cases document discussion up to the first item because Shane's got to go halfway through the meeting. We'll then cover task force presentation and final report stuff, and then the draft charter proposal. Any other updates or changes to the agenda before we get started? I'm going to add one thing, which is some background on Ian's comments and, you know, strategy moving forward about that kind of stuff. All right, so current status. Who just joined?
Richard.
Hey, Richard. Okay, so current status of where we are. The presentation is pretty much done. The final report is as good as it's going to get before the face-to-face meeting. We're calling it a draft final report because we want input from folks at the face-to-face, so folks don't think that any of this is set in stone. Ian Jacobs responded to the final report in a way that I think many of the folks that are in the Verifiable Claims Task Force found concerning, problematic, whatever, you know, adjective you want to use. It was not a good response. We have responded to him. Basically, he's saying, you know, we should be only focusing on the things that the Verifiable Claims Task Force has been doing since we were set up. And we're basically responding to him saying, listen, the whole thing that we're trying to do is gather data so that we can make the right decision. And that's what we have done. We have a survey, we have use cases, we have interviews, and all of that is going in the final report. I think some of you have read Ian's comments as just trying to be obstructive or blocking us. Honestly, it can certainly be read like that. So we've got two strategies. One in that, you know, he was rushed and just kind of fired off an email without thinking too deeply about what he was saying. And two, you know, he is actually being obstructive and you know, how we're going to address that. I think, you know, we should give people the benefit of the doubt and note that he's trying to be helpful. And he has some idea in his head on the best way for us to present this stuff is, but it's not clear from his email what that is. Okay, so the report basically states, you know, it covers a lot of, you know, it covers everything that we've been talking about in the interviews and surveys, and then it makes a specific suggestion at the end, which is, we should create a charter. The Web Payments IG should create a charter because there are clear payments use cases as well as education and healthcare use cases, right? Nobody is saying we should not do work in this area. Nobody said don't try it, just go out and use OpenID Connect. Many people said that, you know, the technologies we've been talking about, SAML, OpenID Connect, do not address the problem statement. We have broad buy-in on the problem statement. So Ian's big pushback is about where, what kind of work should happen. And so what we have proposed in the charter, and we need to update the charter, but what we're proposing is let's work on the data model, let's work on the syntax, and then let's analyze if that data model and syntax, a way of expressing verifiable claims or way of expressing credentials, if that fits neatly into existing technologies like SAML and OpenID Connect. That is what the working group would work on in the first year to year and a half. The reason we're making that proposal is because we've already had people within W3C staff like Harry Halpin and people outside like Jeff Hodges, who did, you know, has done a lot of work in this area. Those people have pushed back and said that they believe, you know, the protocols exist and just to reuse the protocols, especially OpenID Connect folks assert that. Clearly, there are people that also worked in OpenID Connect that disagree with that. But the last thing that we want to do right now is be pulled into that protocol fight. So the charter is designed to put a stake in the ground, get some momentum in an official group, and then demonstrate, either demonstrate that we can use the data format and syntax in existing systems, which would be a great win for everybody because we wouldn't have to create a protocol, or it's to demonstrate that there are issues with current protocols and that we can't achieve some of the use cases and address some of the problem statements without there, you know, having some, without us doing some protocol work. Okay, so that's what we're going in to the group with next Monday. I told Ian that I would specifically ask this group if anyone here feels like we do not have consensus on that direction. Does anyone here object to that direction, proposing that direction to the interest group? Okay, so we need to get some of you on the record saying that you agree with that direction, because Ian does not feel like we have consensus around that. So if some of you can put yourself on the queue and let us know your thoughts on the direction, whether you think it's a good direction, concerns with it, anything of that nature.
This is Shane. I'll just say, and I agree with Longley, we could do a plus one, minus one if you want, but if you're looking for actual voices, and I'm not sure Ian appreciates my voice today anyway, but I do think it's a measured approach is a reasonable way to do it. Specifying formats and then seeing if that can be supported with existing technologies feels reasonable as a first step. And I don't mind. I wish we could do more faster, but I always wish that.
Right. I think specifically what they're, you know, the other thing that, you know, we're looking for is, you know, are we misrepresenting all of the people that we talk to or the interviews by making this proposal? Like, does anyone feel like we're misrepresenting where, are we misreading consensus, or is this where, you know, is this where consensus is? So it's not just talking for yourself, speaking for yourself. Has anyone here seen anything that would make them think that this is not where consensus is, that we should not, you know, that we should be doing something else or should not be doing the work?
This is John. I think this direction is good. On the letter that I wrote last week, I was cited by whoever, I forget where the feedback was at from Ian. That was an earlier Ian communication.
Yeah.
And he picked out something that I said about saying that I disagreed with our direction because I had said we should move in the direction of developing not only the nouns of this problem space, but some idea of what the flows should be. And that was before discussion last week in which you explained the sensitivity. I wasn't aware of that sensitivity at the time. I'm fine with this direction of starting with a description of the data models or the ontologies or however you want to put it.
Right. Okay. Yep. So I think what we're going to, you know, if this comes up again at the face-to-face meeting, which I'm sure it's going to come up, and he says, you know, there is no consensus on what we should do as a next step, because you didn't talk about use cases with the interviewees, or, you know, they weren't being very specific and you're jumping to conclusions. The counter argument to that is, so let's work on a charter, just a draft charter. We're not committing to anything. So we're going to put the charter together. We're going to put a bunch of use cases together that we feel, you know, reflect consensus and what people want to do. And then we're going to go back to the interviewees, and we're going to go back to the, you know, the CG and the people that we talk to and see what they think, because then we will know if they believe this is the right direction, or they'll have concerns, you know, or if they have concerns, and then we will iterate on that. That's the next logical step. Does that seem like a solid line of argumentation for moving this stuff forward?
Sounds good to me.
Go ahead, Craig. You're on the queue. I'll scribe for you.
Yeah, I think one thing that is clear is this is an area which has historically been fraught with problems, and people are very wary about treading in here and perhaps not having learned the lessons from the previous things. And that's sort of the sense I got from a lot of the interviewees, and I think is a way to interpret Ian's feedback as well. So I think an incremental approach, as frustrating as it may be, is really the only way to try to move forward, to try to move things forward a step at a time where we can achieve a consensus. So I think to say that that is what the charter of the group should be, I think is really the only realistic way that things can go. But it is fraught with consensus. I think a number of the interviewees came across to me as being pretty skeptical that we could make anything here, although hopeful that maybe something could be done.
Go ahead, Long.
Yeah, I was just going to say that my view with the interviewees was essentially that everyone was saying, yes, something should be done, please do something, and good luck doing it. it was sort of, there's a whole lot of fatigue in the area because people have worked on this for quite a while. But even the people that have worked on it all sort of had slightly different goals or more narrowly scoped goals. And some of the problems that arose from this in this area have to do with people having larger visions for what could be done, and having a larger vision for a larger ecosystem, and then people looking at it and saying, well, let's just scope the problem to something very small. So solutions came out that kind of took baby steps to solve things like the single sign-on problem and things of that nature. So while I agree with you that we do need to take small steps, I think we need to make sure that we're taking small steps with a larger ecosystem and vision in mind. And I think that's kind of what we're trying to do by talking about doing, you know, data models and syntax and stuff like that, allows us to step toward that larger vision instead of taking on a very specific point of pain in the industry and trying to solve for that very specific problem. Because I think that's one of the mistakes that happened before. And I think we can avoid that here. My response is sort of like, I'm agreeing with your saying with what Greg just said, and I think that is the only reasonable way to move forward in taking small incremental steps. And I think it's also important what kind of small incremental step we take, and I think that the direction we're heading in is a good one.
All right. Okay. So thanks, everyone, for that all that input. It's good. I think it's clear at this point that this is the direction that the VCTF thinks, the Verified Claims Task Force thinks we should take. I'll send that, you know, info back to Ian and take that to the face-to-face meeting next week. Okay. Shane, I know you have to go very soon. Let's talk about use cases. document in light of this new information?
I don't feel like the new information changes anything about the use cases right now, but maybe I'm wrong.
Could you let us know about kind of what changes have been made over the past week or 2 weeks, just so we have an idea of how it's structured right now, and then we can
of
go
course.
Into how.
So the document right now has been restructured a little bit based upon the discussions we've had in this group and outside of this group over the last couple of weeks. If you follow the link, so you sort of can see what's going on, I'll just walk you through the sections. Obviously, there's the sort of the boilerplate that you would always expect in a W3C community report. The introduction section is not terribly interesting. I try to stress a couple of times in this document that just because we talk about certain terminology, we're not talking about architecture. We're not presupposing an architecture. We just, you know, needed terms to hang things on, right? Section 1.2, how to read this document, is new. It talks about suggests a way to understand the document, to walk through it. The terminology section is based upon the terminology, a common terminology that the community group had developed. We added a couple of terms to it, tightened it up a little bit, but it's essentially what you're familiar with. We're only including the terms that we use in this document. Obviously, there are more in the base document. Moving into Section 3, examples, and then this may be a sore point. We talked about flows just a minute ago, and that some people may be sensitive to flows because it presupposes things about protocols. I hope it doesn't. I mean, I hope we're talking in a very generic way about two things here. So I tried to set up with some examples how things could be done with a simple flow of how we might create a verifiable claim. Thank you, Greg Kellogg, for putting this flow together. I tweaked it a little bit last night, Greg, but otherwise it's just a simple flow about how a verifiable claim might be created by someone, in this case an identity credential. And then in the next section, how Jane might then use that identity credential to prove her age without revealing other information about herself, so that she can go and, you know, order liquor from an online store or something. That's kind of the sort of high level view of you know, a vision of a financial transaction that needed a claim, and here's a way that we can do that. Again, not presupposing any sort of real architecture or any sort of real protocol stuff. It's just a basic flow. Then we go into the use cases. I have tried to pare these down. I've classified use cases as either essential or less than essential. There are some other terms we use later in the document. I'll talk about that in a minute. But essentially, you know, we the things we think are really important versus the things that are nice to have or would be useful or whatever, kind of push those to an appendix. For each use case, what we've done is classified a requirement. So if you look at section 411, for example, you'll see text like this. Right? So we're saying there's a requirement, and then an explanation of that requirement in terms of a motivation. Why is that? What's the motivation behind it? How important it is? And then the various scenarios that people have suggested to us that led us to believe there was this requirement. If there was a financial scenario, I've pushed that to the top. And if there's more than one financial scenario, I've pushed them all to the top. But I've hung on to the other scenarios because I think it's important for us to say, you know, obviously we're talking about payments here, but this problem is beyond payments, and, you know, solving it here, we can solve it XYZ places as well. We did not edit these use cases a lot. If they came, or the scenarios, if they came in from somebody as part of a survey or whatever, we didn't want to change their words. If there were spelling errors or whatever, we kind of fixed those, but we didn't want to change what they said, right? So if you look at these and you're like, wow, this is really verbose, or I wouldn't have said it that way, or whatever. I understand that. I wouldn't have either, but we didn't want to put words in people's mouths. So we have basic use cases, and we have them organized by the fundamental tasks that people might perform about claims, right? Issuing them, revoking them, consuming them, and managing them. Oh, and endorsing them is sort of the fifth thing. So that's how we have this structure. I'm not going to walk you through every use case. We don't have that kind of time. I think we've done a decent job of pulling things up, and I think we've done a decent job of making sure that the most important financial things are the things that have come out first. I also think we've done a decent job of trying to not talk about protocol in these requirements. We're talking about what needs to be in a claim, what we need to be able to do with a claim, but not how that moves around on the internet. Appendix A, then, is what I'm calling the extended use cases, which is just basically everything else organized the same way as Section 4, and kind of off in a bucket, so we can pull it out of here if it overwhelms people, or people can ignore it if they don't care about the extended use cases. That's where we're at. It's definitely still a drafty document, but I'm okay showing it to the interest group next week as a sort of work in progress, but we're making good progress. Does anybody have any questions? Now that I've said all of that, does anybody have any questions?
Thank you, Shane. This is really awesome, and thank you, you and Greg and Dan Burnett and Brian for working on this stuff. Like we would not be nowhere near where we are with this document without each of your help. So thank you for that. I think the structure is fantastic. It helps us at least show people what we're talking about. And I also feel comfortable showing this to people, especially the IG, to demonstrate that there are a ton of use cases, not just in payments, but elsewhere. But anyway, there are use cases. So Shane, Ian responded to this and said, the use cases weren't a part of what the VCTF should be doing. We shouldn't talk about them. Clearly, at least I disagree with that. I think the use cases are really important. In his recent thing that he sent to the list, in his recent email, he said, that's fine, we can talk about use cases, but we really need to know which use cases the interviewees want to address. So that totally kind of changed his mind, which is good because, we do want to hear what use cases people feel like, what use cases need to be addressed. But I think that the way that we're going to pitch this to the IG is to say, yes, absolutely, we want to know which use cases are most important to the interviewees and the rest of the people in the group. But with that being said, we think the right way to do that is to write a draft charter, pair the use cases with the draft charter, and say, what do you think about this? And if they don't agree with the use cases, we can say, hey, there are these other use cases as well. Do you want any of these added? Do you want them removed? We can ask a more specific question rather than pointing them at a gigantic list of use cases and asking them to pick which ones they want to see addressed, because clearly each person is going to have a different perspective on what's important to them. So Shane, I think what we're going to end up doing at some point is we're going to have to pare the use cases down into a much simpler set just for the purposes of the charter discussion. You had asked, what is there to do? So I agree with you. I don't think that there's anything short-term to do, but long-term, I think we're going to go through and the group may hand-select some use cases that we feel are vital to the first charter. John is on the queue, and then after that, it'd be good to hear your thoughts on that, Shane. Go ahead, John.
Yes. Greg, you started out by saying that you were concerned that the you were asking the question of whether the flows would serve, and I'd like to just hear from other people, more politically aware people in the group, whether those will pass muster. I think they're incredibly helpful to understanding the model without crossing the line into politically sensitive areas. Do others believe that that will pass?
Speaking only for myself, yeah, I think that Shane and Greg walked a very fine line, exactly the way they should have in creating these diagrams. It doesn't talk about protocol. It does assert that there are certain actors in the ecosystem, but we're asserting that in the problem statement. We're identifying these different actors. And we do the diagrams kind of talk a bit about protocol without calling out like OpenID or any of the other stuff. So the diagrams are definitely going to help way more than they hurt.
This is Shane, and thank you for saying that. I think we did walk a very fine line, and I think part of that line, how do I say this carefully? I don't have to be careful in this group. Hi.
I just have to be careful when drafting.
Yes. I think what the thing to keep in mind with these flows is that we try to use the terms in the flows, right? So, and the terms are incredibly generic. So to the extent that we talk about things like a credential curator, I mean, we're not presupposing what that is or where it lives. It could be a worker living inside your browser. I don't know. Who cares? Right?
Yeah.
As long as we're generic, I think we're safe in using the terms without presupposing a solution.
I think just one quick comment is I think some people might look at the flows and nitpick things and say, like, well, how is this any different from existing technology, or how does this protect anyone's privacy? I guess that's to be expected, and we just need to have responses to it.
Yeah, and I think we do have responses to some of that, meaning, the problem statement outlines how what we're trying to do is different, as well as the list of requirements. I mean, that answers the how is this any different question, I think. Okay. Any other? Oh, go ahead, John.
Yes, one other point. When I look at the use cases about education, and I recognize some of those, there are really two classes of, it seems to me that the use cases cover two classes of ground, and I would just like to offer a thought on those two kinds of use cases. One kind of use case, like the one that the book company, leading provider of electronic textbooks, which is what I do, is an authorization scenario where you're trying to find out if somebody is entitled. Actually, there are two use cases in this one. One, are we entitled to get into the system? Are we entitled to open a book? And another one says, and if you don't have a license for the book, which is yet another credential, issue it. So one kind has to do with I think it's a very common use case we deal with all the time, but I would also say that it's a use case that is handled by current technologies pretty well. I think the technologies that we're describing will handle it better, but it at least it's within range. But those use cases like the Veterans Affairs one or the getting a driver's license, in which you really are creating a verifiable claim. And I would say the killer one in there would be electronic transcripts, entire electronic transcripts. That gets into terrain which is just completely not handled by current technologies. And that's if we're going to have a place where we have unfair advantage, it's going to be in the classes of use case that really are verifiable claims and not just enough of a claim to get access to a resource. I'm not sure if that's clear, but you may just keep that in when we're winnowing these things down, because there's really a lot of repetition in these cases. So that was my comment.
Yeah, I think that's excellent input, John. I mean, yeah, that's a great thought, and I hadn't really thought about it in that way. So we may want to scan through and have a set of killer use cases where it's just not a solved problem. And we're so the charter is going to propose that we do an analysis on use cases that cannot be accomplished using the current technologies that exist today, using the verifiable claims, data model and syntax, plus the existing technologies. And that may be, one of those use cases that we can point to say, hey, we might need to do some new protocol work here. And Longleat's, saying maybe we need to add some competency-based and transcript claim use cases. Plus one to that. Okay. Anything else on use cases? I think, Shane, I think it's, the document's in good shape for the meeting next week. I don't think we can do what Ian's asking us to do, which is go back out to the interviewees and ask them about which use cases they want by next, Monday.
Clearly we cannot.
Right. So I think we're more or less done.
Okay.
Just for the face-to-face.
I do have, not for the minutes, please, Greg. I don't appreciate the playing field changing under us while we're playing. I don't think that makes any sense. And I'm going to push back very strongly on that if it continues to happen. You can't just make up rules in the middle of the task. It's ridiculous.
Right.
Just one more thing, John. If you have some specific things that you want rolled in, next week or whatever, not before Monday, please. Let's talk about that and maybe we can iterate on it and find something. I think we have some use cases along the lines you're talking about, or some scenarios, and I think they probably dovetail with what's already in here. We just didn't retain everything. There's a whole another 200K of text in another document we haven't rolled in. So
I'd be happy to do that. Unfortunately, while you all are out here in San Francisco next week, where I live, I'm going to be in Washington D.C. at the IMS meeting. But after next week, I would love to help out with that. I think we could pare this down into really a couple of cases that are strong. If that'll be useful next week, I hope it will.
Yeah, absolutely, it'll be helpful. When do you come back from DC, John?
I'm sorry. Say that again.
When do you come back? When do you come back from DC?
Friday. I fly back Friday.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be there Friday. I don't know if Shane is going to be there Friday. Greg, I know it's got to.
I am there. I am there all day Friday. I fly out at midnight or something.
Actually, I just checked it. I fly back Thursday afternoon. But if
we'd love to meet up with you and sit down and have lunch if you have time.
Why don't we figure that out? I'll send you an email. Thank you.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Anything else on use cases? All right, let's move on to the next topic then, which is the topic, verifiable claims. Hold on one second, let me copy. Verifiable Claims Task Force presentation. Get a link to that here. Here's the Google Doc. Basically, the presentation is an overview of the report. So we start out with talking about the purpose of the Verifiable Claims Task Force. We talk about the problem statement, slide four. We talk about what research data we gathered, the input. So we note the surveys, the interviews, and the CG discussions. Then we jump into the research findings. So we split it into two areas, areas where there is consensus and areas where there is concern. And I plan to effectively just go down each one, doing a quick overview of them. The presentation, I think, is going to take about 20 minutes. We have 60 minutes allocated. We'll try to cut it down to 15 if I can. And then slide 9 and 10, we talk about very specific payments use cases. These are ones that are defensible. Having been involved in the Web Payments IG and Web Payments Working Group, I know there are people in the room that care about these use cases and will positively vote to say that these are important to them. So the payments use cases are, you know, customer loyalty, reducing misshipped goods, because close to 5% of all packages are misshipped at the cost of $35 to $75 of correcting the misshipment, even if it's a $5 shipping charge. There's proof of age, and then identity proofing, like know your customer, anti-money laundering, and large value transactions. So these things are important to many of the payments people in the room, and I think they'll resonate with them. And the reason we're doing that is to ensure that they understand that this verifiable claim stuff affects them too, and it's a solution to their problems as well. The next steps, we're being pretty aggressive about this, meaning that, you know, we're not asking the group what should we do next. We're saying this is what we believe we should do next. We should propose a draft charter. We should get these use cases whipped into shape, and then we should go out and start socializing the charter to see what issues people have with the charter, and then we should iterate and refine the charter based on the feedback that we get. So, you know, I think one of the things that will come up is that someone in the room will say, I don't believe there's consensus to start on a charter. Let's go and do this other data gathering exercise. As previously said, you know, I'm starting to become very frustrated with the playing field changing out from under us, being asked to go out and do something and then saying, well, you didn't do it in the right way, or you didn't do the exact thing that I wanted you to do. So if there's pushback, there is nothing to stop us from just going directly to the W3C membership and circulating the charter there. Right. So ideally, we have W3C staff buy-in, and we definitely want that. It makes the whole process easier. But if the group feels like certain W3C staff members are being obstructionist about this, then we have the option of going to the AC meeting, the advisory committee meeting in March, or emailing a lot of the folks that we know. So we have a lot of folks that we know that are W3C members, and just circulating it among them directly instead of going through W3C management to do it. So we still have options. We're not out of options, far from it. And this is what we're going into the group with. I think the biggest disaster that could happen at the IG meeting is that we aren't convincing to the IG members in the room. So there will be, you know, 40 people in the room. And if we don't make a good case to them, that is going to reflect badly on moving forward. Note that for this Verifiable Claims Task Force to be created, you know, the staff were against it being created in January, and the IG overruled them. So the same kind of thing might happen this time around. W3C is a membership organization. It's the members that get the final say. They're the ones that get to vote. And then the staff tries to help through, you know, building consensus and things of that nature. So so we'll just see where we are at the end of next Monday. And if we have a green light from the IG to start working on a charter, we have succeeded. And if we don't, it's not, you know, it's another bump in the road, but it's not the end. All right. Any questions on the presentation or what we're going to present and assert we should do next? Anyone feel like this is not the right direction?
Oh, this is Shane. I was muted. Sorry. I'm cautiously optimistic about it. I'll just remind all of us who are going to be there. I don't know who that is, but whoever's going to be there next week. The staff contact isn't in charge. So it's not any of our jobs to remind him of that. Yeah, I don't. But the staff contact isn't in charge. And so we can proceed and, you know, act in whatever kind of way we want as a task force and as an interest group, because that's how the W3C operates. And if the staff contact gets too pushy, I'm warning any of you who are there, I'm going to stand up to him, because I don't like the way he's pushing his agenda. I don't think it makes sense.
Yep, and Shane won't be alone in that. I don't think it'll get to that point. You know, I think the staff contact is—he's very smart, he's very sharp, and when he sees what he believes needs to be done, he is single-minded in going in that direction, and he is looking out for the best interests of W3C and W3C's members. So, if we can convince them and convince them that what we're doing is the right thing, then we will have a very powerful ally. Okay, Shane, I think it's just you and me that's going to be at the meeting next week. That is starting to become a problem. As you saw, Ian stated that, you know, he wanted to hear from the interviewees. And it turns out that, you know, the survey and those companies are not as important in their feedback, nor are the CG members. That's the implication, which I think is totally the wrong way to think about it. But that's also something that we have to try and overcome. And the only way to really do that is to make sure that, you know, more of the CG, credential CG participants and the VCTF participants start showing up at these meetings and participating more directly. Otherwise, it just looks like a small minority of us making a lot of noise. Okay. Anything else before we move on to the final report? Oh, go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, just regarding that, what is the protocol for the meeting? Is it completely open? Does it require invitation? As I mentioned to you, I'm available much of Monday through Wednesday when the meeting takes place, not all of it.
We would love to have you there.
Yeah.
We would love to have you there. It's by invitation. And the Web Payments Working Group has been fairly stingy with invitations, especially to invited experts. Let me reach out and ask, because I was able to get like Christopher Allen into the meeting. Let me ask and note that you would potentially be, you know, staff contact for the work, or there's a possibility here if you believe that that's what you want to do, that you'd want to be involved in the verifiable claims work as W3C staff contact via their what is that thing called? Whatever program where an external company pays for you to.
Oh, it's the fellow, W3C fellow.
Yeah, as a W3C fellow. So, and that it's vital that you're there for at least the 11 o'clock meeting. Would that work for you, Greg, if I asked in that way?
Yeah, I can make pretty much any time work. I just have to shuffle some things around.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Greg. All right. I'll send that out in today at some point. Okay, anything else before we move on to final report, final draft report? topic there. We're going to have to go in 5 minutes because we have a web payments call as well. At least a decent chunk of us will have to go in 5 minutes. Here is the link to the Verifiable Claims Task Force final report. It's rough, but it's there. It covers, hits all the highlights. It could really use some editing work, but, we're short on time. I think the first 5 sections are solid, meaning that, I think they're in really good shape. Meaning the problem statement, summary of research findings, requirements identified by research findings and research input, those are solid. Areas of consensus and areas of concern could always be modified and updated. I think they got the basic idea across. The big sticking point, at least with Ion, seems to be section 6.5, minimum first step to establish a way to express verifiable claims. That is going to be the point of contention, because we're asserting that there is a minimum viable step that can be taken, and we, and as far as our research findings are concerned, there's consensus on what that minimum first step is, meaning that if we make it any more if we try and pare it down any more, there is no work to be done, and if we expand the scope, people will start complaining about the protocol work. So that's kind of where. I think that's going to be the bone of contention at the face-to-face. Any questions on the draft final report? Anything that we think we've missed on areas of consensus or areas of concern? If you want to review what that looks like, it's on page 1, table of contents, section 6 and section 7. All right. Well, if there are no issues with the report, we'll jump to the next topic, which is the draft charter proposal. The draft charter proposal is not done. It really needs a lot of work. I'm hoping to spend some time on that tonight or tomorrow night. What we are proposing is data format and syntax work as the primary deliverable for the group. The secondary deliverable is an analysis on how that data format and syntax can fit into current systems like SAML, OpenID Connect, OAuth, et cetera. I think we're going to say that we may work on two syntaxes in parallel, one for the Jose stack and one for the linked data stack, because I think that will ensure that we are actually doing a good comparison between all the technologies available to address this issue. And then in the analysis phase of how those formats apply to OpenID Connect and things of that, we're going to say either, great news, the data format, data model and syntax totally work with one of the existing systems and we don't need to do any protocol work, or we're going to say there are a number of use cases that we cannot address with current protocols, and either we expect these changes to be made to those protocols to address those use cases, or the design is fundamentally flawed and we suggest this other mechanism as the next step, and that gets turned into a new chartering discussion. And we would start that chartering discussion probably a year to a year and a half after we get this first working group spun up and going. Any questions on the direction for the charter? Is everyone happy with that direction for the charter? Anyone feel like there's a better strategy or there's a part of that strategy that could backfire?
This is Shane. I think there's a risk in talking about even stacks that you're evaluating that people are going to be like, wait a minute. Aren't you presupposing solutions here?
Right.
I mean, I guess if I were you, I'd be willing to or prepared to find a way around that, or find a way to not say that in the charter.
Right. One of the things that you're supposed to say, well, let's see. Actually, you know what? We can get around that and not say it. So we should probably not. I mean, we may want to split liaisons and dependencies, but not specify OpenID Connect or SAML in the charter. I think that's a good idea, Shane. I will write it with that in mind.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Anything else? Do people feel that we've got all the docs we need to make this presentation at the face-to-face next week? All right. Thanks, everyone, for the call today. We will definitely not have our call next week because we'll be at the face-to-face fighting the good fight, and then we'll reconvene the week after that to let everyone know how it went. The face-to-face meeting will have an IRC channel, so you can track along at 11 a.m. San Francisco time if you want. But I mean, you know, we'll of course circle back around and tell everyone how it went, summarize how it went. Okay, thanks everyone. See some of you in San Francisco next week, and if not, we'll chat again in 2 weeks.
All right. Thanks, Manu.